From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Classical pianist Susan Jong is one of the masterminds behind The Concert Truck, a mobile concert hall that brings music to the people with free concerts in public places. Then, whether it's gathering dust in a drawer or worn every day, nearly everyone owns jewelry. We speak to the director of the Baltimore Jewelry Center, which offers classes in metalwork, enameling, and more. And artist Mary Fissell tells us how jewelry making is like problem solving.
There's a kind of almost engineering problem solving aspect to making these small pieces that can be quite intricate. Like, okay, if I put the hinge here, then that means I can't open it on this side, I have to open it on that side.
It's on the record after the news. Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. This summer, we spoke with classical pianist Susan Jong. Jong is one of the masterminds behind The Concert Truck, a mobile concert hall that brings free classical music concerts to audiences in surprising locations like community center parking lots or playgrounds. I asked her how the idea for a concert truck came about.
The idea actually came from my partner, Nick, who is also a pianist.
Nick Luby.
And he was traveling with his grandfather one summer. And along the way, they would stop at churches so that Nick could practice and keep his chops up. And when he did that, people would gather. They were very curious to see what was going on. And Nick thought it might be cool to have some kind of mobile concert venue where he could pique people's interest in the music that he plays. And so he pitched this idea to me, and I thought he was crazy. But then I actually watched this movie called Chef with Jon Favreau. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's about a professional chef who buys a food truck and quits his restaurant job and just travels across the country selling Cubano sandwiches. And that was something that I wanted to do, but with classical music. So with that.
So the concert truck is the musical version of a food truck.
Essentially, that's kind of how I conceived of it initially.
Help us envision this. So tell us how this works, this truck.
Sure. We took a 16-foot box truck, which was donated to us, and we basically carved a hole on the driver's side, and we put in doors that we had built. And so the doors open up, and inside there's a stage that's complete with lights, a nice floor, and curtains, and a piano where we both play.
So you pull this truck into some place, open the side of the truck, the doors swing out.
Mm-hmm.
Voila, there is a performance stage.
Yes, exactly. All within 10 minutes, ideally.
All within 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So what is the instrument that is there waiting on the stage?
So because we are traveling a lot, it would be, you know, my dream if we could put a wonderful acoustic in there, but acoustic piano. But for where we are right now, we can't really handle that. So we have something that is actually really quite wonderful. It's a very sophisticated digital hybrid piano that's made by Roland. It's called the GP607.
I don't know what a digital hybrid piano is.
So it's an electronic piano, but it uses a modeling technology. So with that, you can actually create a lot more nuance with the sound than you would with a normal digital piano.
On the Concert Truck's Facebook page, there are videos of performances in big city public squares, small playgrounds, parking lots, even a brewery. How do you decide where to go? Do you get invited?
Sometimes we get invited, and sometimes those things are arranged for us. We tend to target places that we feel like will have a lot of foot traffic, that we think a lot of people will be able to see it, but also places that don't have too much going on so that people will get a chance to experience the narrative of the pieces unfold from beginning to end.
So that people would have time to stop and spend some time with you.
Too distracted by too much going on. So, for instance, a restaurant would be a great place because people would sit down and eat, and then they could enjoy these pieces in their entirety. We are also looking to get involved with Baltimore schools. I'm not totally sure what that's going to look like, but that is something on our list that we would like to see happen.
Do you let people know in advance that you're coming?
Sometimes. It depends. It depends on the kind of gig. Sometimes these things are arranged months in advance, and sometimes we just give guerrilla concerts.
Pop-up, literally.
Yeah.
Pop-up concerts. That's classical pianist Susan Zhang here on the record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about Zhang's concert truck, a mobile concert hall that brings free classical music to public spaces. So most of the people that I see in the videos on your Facebook page, they didn't know they were going to have this experience. They just were open to it.
Right, yeah.
In one performance video, a half dozen little girls are into a game of tag right in front of the truck where you're playing a particularly intense piece. How do you feel about that? Does it distract you?
It can be. I think that all of my very intense conservatory training has prepared me for any distraction, that I can keep going and keep performing. So obviously we would love for people to sit and listen, but we also want people to feel comfortable in their listening process, whatever that might look like. So especially for children, I remember being a kid, and when I was forced to do something that required a lot of attention span and someone was making me sit there and not move at all, I tended to not like that thing that I was experiencing. So I think especially for kids, to have them be able to sort of do what they want with what we're offering them is important.
What do you hope audiences of the concert truck come away with?
So we see the concert truck as a bit of a social experiment. Nick and I both really love the music so much that we've essentially dedicated our lives to it. And we wanted to see if we could take it out of the hall and still sort of maintain the emotional power that it can have. And we wanted to see how people would react to it without all of that, and to see if they could relate to it in a different way. So I guess my hope would be that they could find a new comfort and familiarity with the music, as well as an excitement for the music.
So you've been at this, about a year and a half?
We started in 2016, so it's a little over 2 years, yeah.
Are you getting any answers to those questions? Do you think people are developing that familiarity, that comfort?
Yes and no. I think we still have a lot more prototyping to do, for sure. We need to experiment more with playing in different places. We have learned a lot about how we need to contextualize the music.
What does that mean?
So I think that with this music, considering that a lot of people maybe may have not heard it or have had experiences with it before, we feel like it's very important to introduce the music and speak about the music in a way that they can at least attach to it. And so that we found that that has been a big piece in audience engagement, is being able to speak about the music in a way that they'll really be able to enjoy it.
What do you personally get from the performances?
Part of why I wanted to do Concert Truck was actually very selfish. I wanted to be able to travel and to meet new people, not in just a tour way, to actually be able to experience the cities and talk with the people from those cities. And I think that the Concert Truck enables that. It also enables conversations with people who are very different from me, who I may have never had the opportunity to speak with on any other occasion.
Give me an example of a conversation like that.
Sure. So in our first tour of Columbia, South Carolina, we were performing outdoors in an area called Five Points, and someone came and sat down in front of us to listen to us, and I talked to him afterwards, and he was a total metalhead, could not have political or social views that were further than mine. But we both just had this love for music, and he actually was really into the music that I was playing. I think I played Stravinsky or something that was a little more metalhead friendly. So we were able to strike this conversation and this sense of mutual respect over this experience that we had together. So that was very gratifying for me. That was something that told me that there's something here and I need to continue doing this.
Classical pianist Susan Zhang co-directs with Nick Luby The Concert Truck, a mobile concert hall that brings free classical music into public spaces. The next Baltimore performances will take place at the International Edgar Allan Poe Festival, October 6th and 7th. We have a link to more information and to our whole interview at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Sprawled across your nightstand, untouched in a safety deposit box, or maybe right around your neck, just about everyone owns jewelry. And this form of decoration can evoke memories and tell stories. The nonprofit Baltimore Jewelry Center offers classes in jewelry making, as well as studio space for artists. Last November, we spoke with the center's director, Shane Prada, and artist Mary Fissell, ahead of an exhibit called The Radical Jewelry Makeover, which features new works created from cast-off pieces. Today, we'll listen back to part of that conversation. I asked Shane Prada how the center got started.
MICA had a continuing studies program in art, jewelry, and metalsmithing that had a 22-year history. That program came to a close in the spring of 2014, and the Baltimore Jewelry Center opened up immediately afterward.
Everybody who started the Jewelry Center is a refugee from the MICA program?
The faculty and the staff, pretty much. We have many, many new students. But when the program ended, we started a nonprofit to continue the legacy of that program.
How did you get interested in jewelry making?
So I actually was a student of the MICA program. I started taking classes in 2010. I was sort of cast about working part-time, looking for something else educationally to sort of fill my time. I was taking classes here and there, and I found a jewelry course that eventually led me to the MICA program. And as soon as I started taking classes, I fell in love with the art form, and I wanted to continue it in a more serious way. And just as I was really investing more time and money into my studies at MICA, it was announced that the program would be closing.
When you say you fell in love with it, can you share with us what is it about it that grabbed you so?
I've always loved jewelry. My mother and my grandmother collected all kinds of jewelry, so I always had it around me. I owned a lot of jewelry. I still do, and have always just loved wearing it. And historically, I never associated myself as a maker of any kind or as an artist. It was actually one of the furthest things from sort of what I enjoyed doing in my life. But when I started taking classes, I just realized like, oh, this is actually something I can do. And it's a way that I can think differently about who I am, and sort of ideas for what to create kind of came to me naturally, which surprised me. And just the act of using my hands to create something that I could wear or someone else could wear was really powerful.
Pretty much total infatuation. So the Baltimore Jewelry Center offers classes for both for skilled craftsmen and novice jewelry makers. What can people learn there?
So we offer classes for anybody with an interest in jewelry making. People can come to us and learn basic hand skills all the way up to more advanced skills.
When you say basic hand skills, yes. What is that?
Sawing or piercing metal, coloring metal, which is called patination, printing on metal, connecting metal through what are called cold connections, so making like little nails we call rivets. Can learn soldering, so connecting metal using heat and an intermediate material called solder. You can also learn just sanding, filing, forming, and shaping metal. Those are the more basic skills that you learn right out of the gate. And then as you progress in your studies, you can learn stone setting, enameling, which is, you know, fusing glass onto metal. You can learn forming and forging, so really bringing movement and shape to metal using hammers and anvils. You can learn complex fabrication.
As you mentioned, each, I can picture jewelry that would display that, but I hadn't thought of such a long list. Are there many places people can learn these skills?
There are not, and that was one reason that when the MICA program closed, we wanted to continue the program. And I should say that MICA has been wonderfully supportive of us and really helped us get off the ground. There are lots of art colleges and universities that have metalsmithing programs, but they tend to be very small. And independent jewelry programs in some ways can offer a little more than some of those smaller programs at universities. We're really the only ones in the Mid-Atlantic that's offering what we do.
And the center is also a place where artists can sell the jewelry.
Absolutely, where artists can come and make their work. So we have a studio rental or bench rental program, and they can be working on production work that they might sell at craft shows or even in our space. We have a few sales a year, and we have a small retail program.
That's Shane Prada, director of the Baltimore Jewelry Center, here on The Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. I want to introduce artist Mary Fissell, who started taking classes at the Baltimore Jewelry Center 2 years ago. Welcome, Mary.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Sure. What prompted you to take that first class at the Baltimore Jewelry Center?
I think it was a long-held wish of mine. I've always worked with my hands as an avocation. I used to be a potter for a while. I knit, I garden. It's all 3D. And when someone told me about the Baltimore Jewelry Center, I thought, oh, I must do this. Don't know how I'll fit it in, but I must do this. And I think my story is much like Shane's, that once I took that first class, I loved it. And one of the elements she didn't mention that really I enjoy is there's a kind of almost engineering problem-solving aspect to making these small pieces that can be quite intricate. Like, okay, if I put the hinge here, then that means I can't open it on this side, I have to open it on that side. Or, well, if I solder that, then I can't do a process later that might disrupt that. So there's an aesthetic part about design, but there's also a kind of problem-solving aspect that it just tickles my brain.
It tickles your brain. What story does your jewelry tell?
It depends on the piece. I did a big project over the summer that I'm still doing with a collaborator where the studio had a wonderful program called Cross Pass where we did different parts of Baltimore. And the collaborator and I did Druid Hill Park. And so those pieces absolutely have a narrative component. They speak about a particular place in the park. We picked up materials literally from the park.
Like what?
Smashed auto glass, bark, slate, things like that. Again, not particularly precious. And then incorporated them into the works, but also made the works refer to that particular place. Like I etched a little map of Druid Hill onto the back of some of the places, or put a little photograph and set it on the back of a piece to show you that it's about that specific Baltimore venue. And I love being able to make work about the city I live in that referred specifically to that place in its material form and even in the material itself.
Shane Prada is the co-founder and director of the Baltimore Jewelry Center. Mary Fissell is a jewelry maker who's taken classes at the center. We spoke last November. A new exhibit has just begun at the Baltimore Jewelry Center. In Profile, Modern Cameos runs through November 9th and features work that uses a cameo as the source, subject matter, or format for the work. We've got exhibit details and our full interview from last fall at the On the Record page at WYPR.org.